athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event. Then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
We're 3 weeks away from Box to Row 7th countdown to kickoff. Going to take place right here in the Triangle in Durham on Saturday, July the 20th. 5 p.m. is the meet and greet. 6 p.m. is showtime. And for those that live in this area, are in North Carolina, or may happen to be visiting the Triangle area on Saturday, July the 20th. We want to see your face in the place. Come out and rep your HBCU. Trey Oliver, the head football coach at North Carolina Central. Vincent Brown, the head football coach at North Carolina A&T. Marcus Hilliard, the head football coach at Elizabeth City State. Adrian Jones, the head football coach at Shaw. Robert Massey, the head football coach at Winston-Salem State, and Maurice Flowers, the head football coach of Johnson C. Smith, all expected to be in the building. If you're not going to be in the area, we may live stream it. We'll let you know more about that in the coming weeks. Look, the NBA draft was center stage, and Zachary Risacher, the number one pick overall by the Atlanta Hawks, falls in line. I mean, look, the first NBA draft was in 1950. Chuck Scheer was drafted number one by the Boston Celtics. And so Zachary Risacher is in line with being the number one pick overall, a succession of number one picks. What is this? The 19. So that was a 1950 draft. This is 1924. So we're talking about, what, 74 years of draft picks, okay? So congratulations to that young man. As a matter of fact, this was very much an international draft, very much like last year's draft was. Wembanyama drafted number one, also from France. But not only that, Alex Sarr was the second pick by the Washington Wizards. He also is from France. So you have a lot of international flavor, obviously. And look, that's permeating throughout the world when it comes to competition. We've got the Olympics that are coming up. And remember, Team USA used to win a lot. I'm talking about back in the day when Team USA used to have college players, and the best college players would participate in the Olympics. But you know, there were some tough times. Like, you'd have those professional teams, and even the Soviet. I don't remember one year there was some kind of discrepancy. I don't remember if it was in the 70s, some kind of discrepancy, whereas the Soviet Union had beaten the Team USA, or the Americans, in the finals of one of the, or for the gold medal in one of the Olympic Games. But then because those college kids were playing against grown men, you came up with Team USA. We had the Dream Team in 92. The Dream Team was successful. The teams after that, subsequent teams, were successful as well. But then you ran into some issues where some of the best players weren't playing. I think when you look at it, Team USA was taking the world for granted, even though certainly at that time, the NBA was expanding globally. Coach K comes along. The Team USA wins three straight. And then even in the Olympics going back 3 years ago, it looked dire, right? Maybe you didn't have some of the best players playing. And Kevin Durant had to put that team on his back to win another gold medal. But in this year's games, you're going to have some of the better players. But look, the world has caught up. And so, and that's where I'm going with this, is that you look globally with the expansion of the NBA, and now it permeates into the NBA draft with so many international players being drafted. So we're going to talk plenty of NBA draft here on the program. Look, the biggest story in this year's draft, because this is the thing. You look at, we don't know, you know, I guess as a viewing public, maybe. I mean, if you're really into basketball and the international scene, you're going to know some of these guys. I wasn't. Even last year, I knew Wembanyama, but that was it, because there was so much hype around him, and a lot of the talk was comparing him to LeBron James in terms of when LeBron James entered the NBA straight out of high school. So this may have been considered a draft that is not as strong. I mean, it's hard for me to say that. I look at, having watched the draft, because I watch college basketball, but I don't watch it intently enough to know who all of the various players are. But in hearing some of the analysts talk about these players and what they could mean to certain teams, not only the international players, but also the college players that were drafted as well, it looks like some teams really, really helped themselves. And I'm interested to know, I'm going to tell you who I want to hear from specifically. I want to hear from my Washington Wizards fans, for those that listen to us on WHBC, WHUR's HD3 channel there in Washington, about the Alex Saar pick. I want to hear from our listeners in New Orleans on WAMF on the Pelicans pick. The Pelicans, of course, going with Tijon Salon. So that was the number 6 pick. So I want to hear from my Pelicans fans as well. Another Frenchman. So your top 3 of your top 6 picks all are from France. I want to hear from you all about your various picks. How about the Portland Trailblazers, interestingly enough, trade with the Washington Wizards. So the Trailblazers pick up Bob Carrington from Pittsburgh, but then he's going to be in Washington. So, you know, I want to hear again from my Washingtonians in terms of what you thought about the Wizards draft, in terms of what the Wizards are doing and how, you know, how they're progressing. Because look, I mean, again, as a Washingtonian, as one that came up loving the Wizards and then the Bullets, I think what the Wizards are doing, especially when you look at the front office is very active. If you listen to, and I'm talking specifically to the Wizards fans and my Washingtonians, I think that what the front office is saying and some of the moves that they're making are good moves. Look, they also add to that office, that front office, Troy Weaver, former general manager of the Pistons, of course, a Bowie State alum. We've had him on the program before. As a matter of fact, I invite you to listen on our YouTube page to our HBCU Collective podcast, where we had Troy Weaver, then the general manager of the Pistons, and then, of course, Brad Holmes, the general manager of the Lions. Had a good conversation with both of them. But they add Troy Weaver to the front office, and you make a trade, you know, in Washington and Portland. And that's why I want to hear from Portland fans as well, because Portland trades Malcolm Brogdon and the number 14 pick. And then the Wizards also get a couple of first round picks as well. And the Wizards trade Denny Avdija. Now, again, I thought Denny Avdija had a good season, but it was a bad team. And he's shown some flashes. Like, he's been, you know, in the league and with the Wizards, I think it's been like 5 years, 4 or 5 years. He's shown some flashes, probably had his best season last year, but it was a bad team. And if I'm the Wizards, I'm not really trying to pay him. So I didn't really have a problem with the trade. As a matter of fact, listen, I think Brogdon is a good pickup. You've got Kyle Kuzma. I think the Wizards are really, you've got the kid from France, speaking of France, that the Wizards picked up in the lottery on last year as well. I think they're really, really doing some big things. But I want to hear from Portland, because if you go back three years ago, and look, Portland had a really good draft going back a couple of years ago as well. So I think Portland is building as well. Maybe Advia is a piece to that. Those that listen to us in Portland on the numbers, I want to hear from you as well in terms of what you thought that the Portland Trail Blazers, how you thought the Portland Trail Blazers did in this year's draft. Look, I really don't know enough about Dalton Connect, but apparently the kid from Tennessee, he fell all the way to the Lakers at number 17. And again, in just listening to what other analysts have said about this kid, the surprise that he in fact fell to number 17, a lot of that had to do maybe because he's an older player, because he's 23 years old and the league is younger. And look, I mean, 23 coming into the league, having had some college experience, I think is a really good thing. And oh, by the way, he did have four 35-plus point games this past season for the Volunteers. I think that speaks volumes. If you're a college player, look, it's hard. Even if you look at a Zach Eaton, as tall as he is, big guy, of course, he was also drafted in this year's NBA draft. Let me look here and see exactly. He went to the Memphis Grizzlies. That's an interesting pick. And in the coming weeks, we'll talk with Mike Wallace, senior editor of Grind City Media, and get his thoughts on the Zach Edey pickup or selection. But even a guy like an Edey, tall guy, big guy, he's not scoring 30 points a game. So this kid from Tennessee, 35 points four different times. And you've got J.J. Redick there. Again, Bronny James being drafted in the second round steals the show. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that a little bit later on in the program. I want to talk. Reggie Jackson had something big time and interesting to say on the Fox broadcast at last week's MLB at Rickwood, honoring the Negro Leagues. I want to talk about that. Also joining us today here on the program, Shawnee Henderson, whose ex-husband is Shaquille O'Neal. Going to talk with her. She's got a new book out. She's, of course, the founder, executive producer of Basketball Wives as well. Keep it locked. We got plenty more to come.
Do you feel like the cost of car ownership has gotten out of control? Take charge by refinancing your auto loan today. One call to Rate Genius can save drivers an average of $1,200 per year. The loan specialists at Rate Genius have helped people for more than 20 years replace high-interest auto loans, lower their payments, and spend less in interest. Rate Genius works with over 150 lenders to find you the most competitive terms. Customers lower their rate an average of 3 percentage points. That's huge savings. It's absolutely free to apply for refinance through Rate Genius, and when you refinance your auto loan, you won't owe a payment for 45 days. Make the 5-minute no obligation call today and get on your way toward affordable car ownership. Call 800-958-0341, 800-958-0341. That's 800-958-0341. Rate and payment values are calculated by using the average savings for customers from January 1st, 2022 through December 31st, 2022. Not all applicants qualify for a loan or rate savings. Actual offer terms, including APR, are determined at the time of your application based on credit worthiness. Value of the vehicle on term and
on last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Within that three championships in at least a five-year range is what I would constitute as a dynasty. Even if a team didn't win back-to-back titles, history would tell me if that team was in fact a dynasty. So I think we have to kind of be careful how we talk about whether a team is a dynasty now in this day and age. To me, a true dynasty, time will tell if a team is in fact a true dynasty.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to Box Row. To
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Last week right here on Box to Row, we talked about the times of the legendary Willie Mays who passed away on last week. One of the things I want to talk about, didn't talk about it on last week, is, of course, Major League Baseball on last week had the MLB at Rickwood Field game, a tribute to the Negro Leagues, and Willie Mays was supposed to have been a part of that, unfortunately passed away before that particular game. And we've seen where Major League Baseball has highlighted the past, black players of the past, Negro Leagues, etc. And on the set of Fox, okay, in a particular setting, Barry Bonds was on a set, but in this particular setting, there was the Fox host, his name is escaping me, but then there was also Alex Rodriguez in terms of the players, Alex Rodriguez, Derek Jeter, and Big Papi, and then Reggie Jackson. So all of those players asked Reggie Jackson a question, and then Derek Jeter asked him about his time playing in Birmingham as part of the A's. He was with the Kansas City / Oakland A's farm team, which was in Birmingham, and the time during which he played. And I'm going to replay now Derek Jeter's question and then Reggie Jackson's response, and then we'll come back and discuss.
Reggie, the baton has been passed for over a century here. We've been talking earlier about if it wasn't for the Willie Mays, the Jackie Robinson, the Reggie Jacksons, the three of us wouldn't have an opportunity to play. How emotional is it for you to come back to a play that you played with one of the greatest teams around?
Alex, when people ask me a question like that, it's like coming back here is not easy. The racism that I played here, when I played here, the difficulty of going through different places where we traveled. Fortunately, I had a manager and I had players on the team that helped me get through it. But I wouldn't wish it on anybody. People said to me today, I spoke and they said, you think you're a better person? You think you won when you played here and conquered? I said, you know, I would never want to do it again. I walked into restaurants and they would point at me and said, the can't eat here. I would go to a hotel and they said, the can't stay here. We went to Charlie Finley's country club for a welcome home dinner and they pointed me out with the N-word. He can't come in here. Finley marched the whole team out. Finally, they let me in there. He said, we're going to go to the diner and eat hamburgers. We'll go where we're wanted. Fortunately, I had a manager, Johnny McNamara, that if I couldn't eat in the place, nobody would eat. We'd get food to travel. If I couldn't stay in a hotel, they'd drive to the next hotel and find a place where I could stay. Had it not been for Raleigh Fingers, Johnny McNamara, Dave Duncan, Joe and Sharon Rudy, I slept on their couch 3-4 nights a week for about a month and a half. Finally, they were threatened that they would burn our apartment complex down unless I got out. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. The year I came here, Bull Connor was the sheriff the year before, and they took Minor League Baseball out of here. Because in 1963, the Klan murdered 4 black girls, children, in 11, 12, 14 years old at a church here and never got indicted. They were from the Klan. Life magazine did a story on them like they were being honored. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. At the same time, had it not been for my white friends, had it not been for a white manager, and Rudy Fingers and Duncan and Lee Myers, I would have never made it. I was too physically violent. I was ready to physically fight some. I'd have got killed here because I'd have beat someone. And you'd have saw me in an oak tree somewhere.
Reggie Jackson's response to the question when asked about his time in Birmingham. And I thought, I mean, it was raw. It was emotional. And look, a lot of people don't want to believe that these types of things happened back in the day, even to prominent black athletes. Look, Reggie Jackson is one of not only the greatest player of all time, but he may be the greatest clutch hitter, or at least one of the greatest clutch hitters of all time. A home run king, 560 some odd home runs in his 21 year career in Major League Baseball. And, you know, I really felt for him. It was, again, it was so, you know, for him, I'm sure it just opened up some old wounds that you, maybe it's not something that he talked about very much. And of course, remembering the time remembering Willie Mays and then being, you know, back in Birmingham, it really opened up some old wounds. And I thought, wow, I just really felt for him, because it was almost like it was taking him back to a time, and to the point you heard him mentioned that, man, he wouldn't have lasted because he would have been ready to beat somebody down, as he mentioned. And so, you know, and I thought Fox did a really good job with the broadcast. I'm like, I had no qualms about that. I thought they did a really good job. This is where I sit. And look, Major League Baseball loves to honor the past, particularly as it relates to black players, to the Negro Leagues. As you have seen, Negro League stats, for which there are box scores, have now been incorporated into the official Major League Baseball stats. Now, it's interesting because I was reading in talking about Willie Mays on last week. I read where in a couple of games he actually had some of the Negro League games. He had a couple of home runs, but because there was no box score, a box score hasn't been located, then they don't officially count that particular stat, even though in the articles of said game, it may have mentioned he had a home run in a couple of articles. So maybe he should have had two additional home runs, but Major League Baseball choosing not to count those home runs because there's no box score. You know, as an old SID, like I get that. Like I definitely get that. But again, what about the present and the future? Okay, look, Major League Baseball highlighting its past is great. But how, again, as I've asked this question before, because Major League Baseball is known for that. I remember I may have been sometime between 2009, 2011. It may have even been 2009. I had Jimmy Lee Solomon, who was, I don't remember if he was the chief diversity officer, but he was he was high up in terms of Bud Selig's Major League Baseball. He was high up. And I mean, that at the time is when, you know, Major League Baseball had the RBI program and seemed to be trying to do something with it. And I remember he came on and talked about what Major League Baseball was doing, and really talked, also mentioned the fact that he said, and I'd have to look, I don't have it here to play. I do have that particular interview, but he said that Major League Baseball was part of the civil rights movement. Bold statement. I disagree with it. Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier was one thing, okay? But that, to me, that doesn't constitute being part of the civil rights movement, particularly as we knew the civil rights movement, which I would argue started maybe even with the murder of Emmett Till all the way through the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. I mean, it's not like, but the civil rights movement as we knew it, because we're still fighting civil rights to this day. So let's not get it twisted. Okay. But again, how is Major League Baseball marketing its product to the black community? How is it doing that? Always, you know, MLB's always talking about the past. Great. And I respect the past. Listen, nobody loves history and wants to know more about how things were more than I do. But I want to ask Major League Baseball a question. How are you marketing, again, your product to the black community? Look, the numbers in terms of player participation that were on opening day rosters, I think it was up to 6.2%, which is great. I mean, that is some progress considering the previous couple of years. It was not even at 4%. It was like right around 3.9%. That's great. But, you know, again, as I've said, and not to single out this program in particular, but I look at other programs, listen to other podcasts. I don't hear, and it's not just about black major league players. It's about major league players as a whole. I don't hear them on, or major league players as a whole, personnel, etc., on black mediums. You've got significant stars in the game. We've made many a request. Like I've said, the only team that has really granted requests to this entity, meaning Box to Row, is the LA Dodgers in 2020 and 2021, because we had Dave Roberts on the program right when the Dodgers, like a couple of weeks after the Dodgers won the World Series. We had Will Smith, the catcher, on the program. How, Major League Baseball, are you marketing your product? It's great to talk about the past. How are you talking about the present and the future and marketing that to, in fact, the black community? You can hit me up if you've got any thoughts at Box to Row, BOXTOROW. Up next, Basketball Wives executive producer, Shawnee Henderson.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Here with Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson. It's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
Main event! Jey Uso joining us here. Could there be a possible return to the bloodline?
For me?
Yes. At some point.
I'm gone, D. Hey, I threw the deuces up before. I'll do it again, man.
Come on, main event. That's family, man. I mean, I'm not talking about now. I get it. But down the line, like, come on.
Hey, D, you see how they be treating me, man? Come on, man. That something. It be your own family sometimes be doing you wrong, Luke. I gotta go, man. Hey, I'm doing all right by myself.
She's Simone Biles.
Actually, really fun. Like, to be honest, had a lot of fun. We were like, oh, of course, like, we're in the best shape of our life. We're feeling confident about our body, and we hope that other young girls and women, like, feel that being strong is so beautiful.
The one and only Michael Strahan, and cannot have you on without talking about Texas Southern. Cannot. So, how did you ultimately end up at Texas Southern?
Yeah, from Houston. Grew up in Germany. When I was a senior in high school, my dad said, I'm going to send you to stay with your uncle in Houston and get a football scholarship. So I went to Houston. I played at Westbury High School for 1 year. Texas Southern was probably the only school that saw me play, being right there in Houston and being a local boy. And Coach Walter Highsmith, I went over to see him, and he offered me a scholarship. It was perfect for me, man, to go to the HBCU, to go to Texas Southern. The size of the school, the education they gave me, not just in the classroom, but about life. I would have been swallowed up at another school. I wouldn't have felt as if I really could have made a difference or had a real purpose of being there. But at Texas Southern, I always felt like I could make a difference and I had a purpose.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Skylar Diggins of the WNBA. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. You know, just been able to work a lot on my body and my shape, and a lot of things that I feel like I needed to work on in the off season, was able to get that done, and you know, it's showing.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get, and I appreciate the sport of hip hop. And it's given me back that same love in return, you know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it. I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them, and I always make them a part of it. And I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people. And I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there. And that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
I'm talking about none other than Serena Williams.
That was definitely one of the better matches I've ever played. I've had it just like that. You know, I was really focused. Just really, you know, excited.
Demetrius Flannery, a.k.a. Lil Meech.
He sent in Atlanta, told me that he was going to move me from my hometown, Miami, to L.A., put me in acting classes, and I had to go 5 days a week, 2 times a day. Only had about a year and a half, but once I started, I didn't want to stop, you know, so once in a lifetime opportunity, I didn't want to watch somebody else, you know, get the role of playing my father and me having to watch him on TV. Opportunity passed me by, so I just buckled down and just focused, man. Put everything to the side and made sure that my number one thing that I wanted to do was focus on being the best possible actor I can be for the show. And that's how it happened, man.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
That is the voice of Common. You went to Florida A&M.
Oh, FAMU days were some of the best days of my life. I mean, I had so much fun there. It was like invigorating. It was an introduction to a new aspect of culture in the world. I mean, the Southern girls is just incredible. you know, the food was great. The black college experience, you can't beat that.
Kyrie Irving.
Playing at Duke for Coach K. What was that like and how that prepared you for the league now?
Playing 11 games, you know, a lot of people think that's not a big package for you to become a better player. But for me, it was. Playing for Coach K, he gave me the keys to the car, and I was driving it in first 8 games. And, you know, being a part of something special like that and having a brotherhood built at an institution such as that one is an experience that you never forget.
Ice Cube has been our guest.
Hey, man, thanks for letting me talk a little music, movies, and sports. Hey, my favorite three topics.
Hey, y'all. It is the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best on Box to Row. Tune in if you want to catch the best BEST interview ever.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio. Let's continue here on the program. We're joined by a woman, as a matter of fact, who is executive producer, founder of Basketball Wives. She's got a new book out. It's called Undefeated, Changing the Rules and Winning on My Own Terms. She is Shawnee Henderson, whose former husband, of course, is Shaquille O'Neal. But she joins us here on the program. Shawnee, we appreciate the time. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me this morning.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. I want to start here because it's interesting. Like, I believe you're coming up on, or if not, have already celebrated 3 years of marriage to your husband, Pastor Kevin Henderson, is that correct?
Keon, and it's coming up on 2 years.
Coming up on 2 years. Keon Henderson. So congratulations on that. As a matter of fact, my wife and I are coming up on, 22 years. Matter of fact, May 26th is going to be 22 years.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So
awesome.
It really, really is. How are things going 2 years in?
Amazing. You know, I think me going on this journey of remarrying at this point in my life is just a game changer. You know, I come in with a lot more wisdom and insight and, you know, clarity on things that are just, not having those dumb deal breakers as we had when we were younger, and just knowing that, you know, you're intentional and committed to someone and the journey with someone and a life with someone, that it's unbreakable.
It's a beautiful thing.
I'm enjoying every bit of it.
Very good. It's a beautiful thing. And so it makes you, in fact, the first lady of the Lighthouse Church in Houston. How are you relishing in that role?
Well, you know what? I grew up in church, so it's not it's not drastically different for me. Of course, I wasn't a first lady, but I know church, you know, I grew up in it. So it's just taking on, you know, more of a role. Of course, eyes are on you. But at the same time, my husband, you know, supports who I am. He doesn't have this expectation of me turning into what the world might perceive a first lady is or look like, what a first lady looks like. I can kind of do me in my role, and I'm enjoying that journey as well. Like I said, I grew up in church, so it's not a foreign thing for me.
Yeah, if you don't mind, how did you all meet?
Through a mutual friend, actually. Mm-hmm. A mutual friend actually suggested that we go out on a date, and we both were in a space of saying we didn't really want to get married again. We didn't really want anything serious. And we just kind of were like, okay, fine. Let's go on this date. And it was life-changing for both of us, to be honest. We sat and talked for about 6 hours on our first time we sat down together.
Wow, that is absolutely awesome. Shawnee Henderson is our guest. She joins us here on the program, the book Undefeated, Changing the Rules and Winning on My Own Terms is available now. Of course, you're going to know her as the founder, executive producer also of Basketball Wives. I want to ask you about a quote from the, I know a lot was made of it. Just want to get maybe some clarity. A quote was taken that said, quote, looking back, I don't know that I was ever really in love with the man, meaning Shaquille O'Neal. And you mentioned that it was taken out of context. How so?
Well, in the book, I talk about how I now am in love with someone and I'm experiencing a love that I've never felt before. So in hindsight, I didn't feel the things that I feel now. I had no idea that I wasn't in love because it was no way you could have told me that. And again, in the book, I talk about that, you know, what I thought was love, what I thought was being in love. At such a young age, that's what I thought it was. And now that I'm experiencing someone loving me the right way, me loving them the right way, a partnership, just all the aspects of love and being in love, I now realize that I wasn't in love before.
Okay. And I get it. Context is key. And thank you for, you know, definitely thank you for saying that. For you, tell us about the book. You know, what made you, what led you to, you know, write this book at this time?
Well, I'm in a place where you spoke of, you know, being a first lady, and I talk about that in the book as well, of just this journey of I'm now speaking more. I do reality TV. That was just a portion of me. And I also talk about that in the book. But it's just a timing thing for me. I think I'm more mature, wiser. I'm sharing my story in a personal way because I know that my journey could help someone else. And the book is exactly that. It's really a journey of so many personal experiences that are relatable to anyone. And I'm hoping that I'm inspiring and encouraging people in general. I know women really relate to my book, but people in general just sharing that they can change a challenge and make it into an opportunity, and you too can be undefeated.
Undefeated, Changing the Rules and Winning on My Own Terms is the new book by Shawnee Henderson. It is available now as she joins us here on the program. Shawnee, did you think, so Basketball Wives, like it's become this huge phenomenon with respect to it, because it's been on, I mean, you can define success, I think, in many different ways. This program has been on for quite some time. How do you, in fact, define success for this? And did you ever think that Basketball Wives would be as big as it has become?
Again, in the book, I talk about the concept of Basketball Wives and how I even ended up pushing it and selling it. It was in a moment of me being in a very low moment of life. And at that time, no, I didn't think big. I didn't think like 10 years, 12 seasons in. I wasn't thinking like that. I was thinking right now. This has to work right now. But yes, I absolutely know that it's successful. I'm so proud of the success of Basketball Wives. We will be coming up on 12 seasons this fall. And just being, you know, a Black woman that created and is executive producing such a long-lasting television show at all is amazing. And I'm in that number, you know? So I absolutely feel successful, and I've been able to help other women have a platform to have a voice, which, again, something I discuss in the book is that I felt like I had lost my voice. I didn't really know that I had lost my voice, but that's also something that you don't appreciate and realize until it's lost and you find it again. So I've been able to help other women have a voice and also make money and become financially independent on their own just based on the platform of having Basketball Wives. So I'm super proud of it. And yes, I would say it is absolutely successful.
And I love what you're saying, particularly independent and Black women succeeding. And to your point, I think context, and I say this all the time on my show, I think context is super important. So I'm not going to speak to this because I haven't really watched Basketball Wives, if I'm honest with you. But I would ask the question. Mm-hmm. I have read where there's been some criticism over the years, and maybe not as much lately because of where we are in terms of reality TV, that it portrays Black women in a certain light. What do you say to that?
Well, again, I discussed that in the book as well, and my experiences of that happening to me. And I think at the time, you know, one of my experiences I discussed in the book is with Essence, going to Essence Festival, and I experienced that firsthand. But I think that, you know, folks love to criticize. And every reality, I don't see Basketball Wives doing anything else, anything foreign that any other reality show is doing. Mm-hmm. And again, the point of it was to give every woman a platform to have a voice. What they do with that voice on that platform is their own personal decision. I'm just providing the platform, and I cannot, you know, depict who or what you are going to be or say. But here's the opportunity for you to have a voice, for you to make some money, for you to do the best with this moment that you can. And what you choose to do with that is on you.
Last two thoughts. So we're big on HBCUs here. So your daughter, Amira, yes, was at Texas Southern. Now I believe she's at LSU now. You know, sort of your thoughts as she continues her collegiate and her basketball career.
Well, I think you're speaking of my oldest daughter. That's Amira.
Amira, yes.
Mimi. She was at LSU first. Now she's at TSU.
Gotcha.
She no longer actually plays basketball. She decided that wasn't her journey, and she's, you know, a full-time student now. My youngest daughter, Miara, is she graduated high school, and she will be going to Florida actually in a week, which is going to break my heart because that's our baby. So she's going to Florida, and we'll be playing women's basketball there. And she's absolutely amazing. McDonald's All-American, Jordan Brand Classic, you know, she's made it. So we're super proud of her. And that's our next star.
Absolutely. Last thought. What do you want people to take away from this book?
Honestly, what I want people to know about this book is that it's a manual more than a memoir. It is just a personal journey and relatable, but I want you to walk away empowered, inspired, and understand resilience and just educated on many people just making it through any circumstance and, you know, putting the broken pieces of your life back together, and you can be undefeated.
Undefeated, Changing the Rules and Winning on My Own Terms is available now. It is by our guest, Shawnee Henderson, who joins us here on the program. Shawnee, really appreciate you doing this. Continued success in all you do.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to be interviewed by you. Thank you.
Shawnee Henderson had quite a bit to say there, and I hope you enjoyed that conversation. As a matter of fact, you can hit me up via X at Box to Row, BoxToRow, if you want to comment on anything that Shawnee Henderson had to talk about, Basketball Wives, the new book, anything, her daughter at Texas Southern, anything, hit me up via X at Box to Row.
More of Box to Row with Donna Ware is on the way.
If you have diabetes, listen up. If you have insurance, you can qualify for a continuous glucose monitor. With a CGM, you can continuously track your levels and trends and spend more time in range, significantly lowering your A1C. More importantly, a CGM eliminates the one thing most people with diabetes hate, painful finger sticks. Order your new continuous glucose monitor today. If you use insulin and if you've seen your diabetes care provider within the last 6 months, you may qualify for your own CGM right now. We'll do all the insurance paperwork and deliver your new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost to you. Medicare and most insurances will cover your CGM, so don't wait. Have your insurance handy and call the Aptiva Medical CGM Health Hotline right now.
800-946-6813. 800-946-6813. 800-946-6813. That's 800-946-6813.
It's Donald Ware from the press box to press row.
The story of the NBA draft and history was made when Bronny James was selected number 55 by the LA Lakers out of USC. Of course, Bronny James, the son of LeBron James, and you go back a couple of years ago, LeBron said, hey, I want to play with my son. I'm going to be playing with my son is what he said at that time. And look, I think the dynamic of that changed a little bit. In other words, let's say Bronny didn't get drafted by the Lakers and he ended up either getting drafted by someone else or ended up as an undrafted free agent. I think at that point, the Lakers would have then went about going to get him, even if he had gone undrafted. I think the dynamic of that changed because 2 years ago, you know, you said, okay, Bronny's got 2 years to really get better and develop and become an NBA player. Well, by all accounts, and I look at it a little bit different, but by all accounts, and even Mike Wallace had come on the show about a month ago and said as much, that, and he was there in Chicago at the combine and watched him and said that he's just not ready right now. And that's true. And that's why he was a second round pick. Nobody was saying he was going to be, although in some mock drafts going back to last year, he looked like he could be a first round pick. But I think a lot of that was based upon what players had not done, college, international players, etc., based upon the pool of available players prior to this past season and what players did to elevate themselves and to elevate their draft status. I think that's because I even saw where he was a top 10 draft pick going back like a year and a half ago. Okay. So that said, I think the dynamic of what LeBron James was saying probably changed. But this was right in all respects. I think, you know how you know the term gentleman's agreement, and nowadays you don't really hear that term as much because we're in a place and in a society where lying is pervasive, where not honoring what you do or what you say you're going to do happens quite frequently. It's not like it used to be. And I'm not saying these things, you know, everything was copacetic or so great back in the day. I'm not saying that. Of course, you had those instances. But the culture was to honor what you say you're going to do. And I think there was a gentleman's agreement that no team, whether it was actually talked about amongst owners and NBA executives of the respective teams, whether it was not, I just think that everybody knows this was the right move. Because, listen, if Bronny James had been this, not even a superstar player, but a good player, maybe a player that you, even if he was a player that you say, okay, he may be a late first rounder, early second rounder, we wouldn't have seen this. I do think if his name, you know, if his name wasn't, his last name was, name wasn't Bronny James, he probably wouldn't have been drafted. But it's a couple of dynamics here. One, there's a marketing aspect to even players being drafted sometimes. I'll give you an example, or even players being picked up. I'll give you an example. For so many years, in particular with the Charlotte Hornets, and in particular when Michael Jordan owned the team, there was generally a local player, meaning in getting more specific, there was usually either a Duke player or a UNC player that was on the team. That's more so, and not that those guys couldn't play, but I'm just saying more from a marketing perspective to get fans, you know, to get fans engaged and maybe even to buy tickets. Oh, I remember when I saw such and such play. Ziggler played in, you know, played, you know, where he played, right? And even with the drafting of a Bronny James, that's good marketing, right? And so you could, again, a couple of different dynamics. Had any other team prior to the Lakers drafted Bronny James, I think said team would have been, I don't, vilified may be too strong a word, but they would not have been respected as much. Because, look, you already knew that he wasn't a great player. And LeBron James strategically came out a couple of years ago and said, I want to play with my son. Now, any 54 draft picks prior to, I would say specifically, however, in the second round, meaning 31 to 54, could have looked at this and said, we're going to draft Bronny James. But I don't think that would have been the right move. I'm not even sure that the Lakers wanted to draft Bronny James. But even from the Lakers' standpoint, it was the right move because your superstar and one of the greatest players to ever play, maybe the second best player of all time, said he wanted to play with his son. Okay, he's, you know, gonna re-sign, certainly, with the Lakers, but you also make him happy, right? And look, this is a players' league. The teams cater to the players, and in particular, the star players. That's why we're still seeing rumblings of perhaps Kevin Durant once again maybe unhappy and wanting to be traded. Perhaps that's sort of the rumbling. Can't confirm that. Out of Phoenix, right? And of course, we know this is a players' league, and I would even say this. You know, this is nothing new in terms of this being a players' league, and in terms of players wanting to out of their contracts or not wanting to sign with the team. This goes back to even Bob Cousy. Like, look at the history, okay? Read your history. Bob Cousy was drafted by the Chicago team. I mentioned Chuck Scheer in that first draft and said he wasn't going to play with that team, right? So he ultimately becomes a Celtic anyway, even though the Celtic he played right there in he played right at in Boston, I believe, played college ball in Boston. So this being a players' league and players wanting to be traded and all those things is nothing new. And to I think to make LeBron James happy, you pick up his kid. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean Bronny James makes the Lakers roster? I don't think so. But look, I haven't seen Bronny James play. But one of the things that I look at in some of the highlights that I've seen, and certainly he was playing against some of his peers, which is not a bad thing. And by the way, we must also recognize that you want to look at the numbers. The numbers weren't great while he was at USC for the 1 year, but he had a cardiac arrest prior to the season. So for him to even be able to come back was, I don't know, miracle, blessing in of itself. So we got to take that into consideration. Maybe they held him back a little bit more than they normally would have. So we don't know what his development could have been on the college level. I know one thing. He showed some flashes at USC. I thought that when I saw some of the highlights of his time, particularly in Chicago at the NBA camp, he did some good things. But even so, you got a lot of players that come into the league. They're rail thin, not very well built. Bronny James has got solid size. Now, he may not be the tallest guy, but I guess my point is one of the emphases you won't have to place as much emphasis on the development of his body and in particular his upper body. He's got solid size. So like a Wembanyama, you got to place some emphasis on that, right? And we saw that a little bit this year, getting pushed off the block in some of the games, but we understand he's going to develop and grow and get bigger as the years go on. That's not something you have to do immediately with a Bronny James. So now you can work on some of the other things with him. But look, to think that he's going to be a guy that's going to come in and help the team right away and all those kind of things, he's not. LeBron James understands that. And that's the thing. You want to cater to your star players. And in particular, in this instance, the Lakers catering and wanting LeBron James to be happy, but LeBron James is also practical enough to know that his son is not ready to make an immediate impact. So he's going to be a guy that's going to dip between the big club, meaning the Lakers, and the G League team. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And we'll see what the future looks like for Bronny James, but certainly in the interim, you make the star player happy. And look, the Lakers got a lot of they've got a lot of needs. I don't think they wasted the second round pick either. It was the 55th pick out of 58. Certainly, there'll be some guys that sign free agent deals. There'll maybe three players picked after Bronny may make an impact at some point in their NBA careers. That's down the line. This was a good move, good PR all around, good gentleman's agreement, I think, between the teams. And I think it's just really a feel-good story, and we'll see what happens with Bronny James going forward. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Shawnee Henderson for joining us today here on Box to Row. Again, the countdown to kickoff taking place Saturday, July the 20th. We're 3 weeks away. And for more information, you can follow us on X at Box to Row, also on Instagram at Box to Row, and follow us while you're there. And always remember to support those that support you. Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.